How's everybody doing? Good? Just want to say thanks for coming in today, showing up. I'm Brett Humphrey. I'm the lead program manager for the Accessibility Group inside Windows Operating System Group, and this is my colleague, Mr. Chris Anderson.
Howdy.
And today, when you look up here, we've got a little URL for you to connect to. And we've done this basically as an example of how we can really start extending accessibility in new ways. This was a little hackathon project that one of our developers did. And as you go to this website, you'll find out it looks like the PowerPoint. But what's subtly different under there is that all the text is taken from the accessibility layer, put on the back end of this so you can listen through and listen if you need a screen reader. And then more importantly, depending on your device, if it's a Windows device or an iOS device or your device of choice, you can connect to it and participate. And we'll talk more about that as we go on through the session. Oops. All right. As always, we love feedback. So if you have feedback, please let us know. Questions, comments, thoughts, we want it all. So we want to keep being able to improve these sessions for you so we can bring you more and more and better information. So the agenda for today is talk about accessibility. And I've spent about probably 7-8 years of my career talking about accessibility with people, thinking about it. And so I really want to talk about, well, what is accessibility? And you kind of have to do that in context with a disability. So we'll spend some time talking about different classes of disabilities and kind of how some of those are situational or day-to-day or maybe even temporary, depending on what's going on. And then kind of why we do the work. And so we'll talk about what motivates us, why we like it, what's going on. And then really, who are we? So I'm gonna step back from the speaker. So who are we? And what is the accessibility team? And what do we think about? And what are the parts we think about every day? And so we'll kind of walk through some of those pieces for you. And then we're gonna take a little journey beyond focus on screen reading, because a lot of times I went out and spoke with developers, or they've come to me and said, hey, look, I don't know what it means to really make an app accessible for a screen reader. And the truth is, it's really, the knowledge to do this is already in your head. And so your ability to walk through an app and talk through an app is pretty straightforward and easy to do. And so we're going to walk through that. And then from there, we're going to do two live demos. Chris is doing some coding with us. And I kind of walk through what you guys see every day as developers. And we're going to look at two common patterns that we see that we'd love people to know and understand and really know how to fix and understand that impact to people with people who use screen readers. So when we dive into the accessibility for your app, again, I mentioned this, we're going to talk about how you design for it. Everybody designs their app, everybody's got an idea of their design, and they're really good at writing it and sketching a picture of it, and they're usually good at saying, I click on A, B happens, I interact with C, and D happens, and so really you build this nice big state diagram, and really there's only three steps to consider, which is a start state, a transition, and end, and you're going to hear me repeat that quite a bit during the talk, and it will make more and more sense as we go along. And at the end of it, the beauty of making these apps accessible, it turns out to be a fairly low amount of code, very small number of lines, and you go to something that's very accessible, and not only be accessible on the developer, on the desktop, but now that accessibility will kind of follow to where all of the Windows Universal platform goes. So when we think about what is a disability, we think about a class of disabilities, and these are some of them and not all of them. But some are cognitive, so sometimes you have a need for less information because that's all you can process. In some cases, you need less information because it's too much stimulus, it overloads and shuts you down. So in the case of some studies with folks with autism, they find that the less type of data they have available to them, actually the better they are to function. There's learning disabilities. People are familiar with, might be familiar with dyslexia or dyscalculia, where you can't really process or write math equations. But the thing about learning disabilities, there's always a flip side, which is what your learning ability. So in my case, I'm low vision, I'm legally blind, and so I learn from really listening really well. So it's also about bringing data to someone in a way that they can consume it, whether it's through audio or through visuals. When you look at visual impairments, there's a range in visual impairments. We'll kind of go through a few samples in the next slides. And then there's motor impairments. The interesting thing about motor impairments is that there's a range of them. They may be more permanent, You may have Parkinson's disease. You may have trouble doing fine motor control. That could also be something more temporary. You've broken your arm and you can't use it. How do you interact with the system? Or more recently, a friend of mine had his little baby Tommy. He's holding his baby. How does he interact with the system? So that's kind of that range of spectrum where you have the ability to impact and help people's lives. On the visual perception side, text size is a common thing. As you get older, your ability to read small text decreases. So how do you help that?
Well, I find that it also, my arms have gotten shorter as I've gotten older. I try to hold things farther and farther away.
Yes.
So is part of this accessibility getting us to where we have longer arms?
It is.
Okay, great.
It is. So to be able to adapt that, because as you go forward, it may be that you need things larger. It may mean that you have color perception also. So I spent quite a bit of time writing reports, and I put together this nice little report where I had some red and some green and some yellow, and I put it in a little Excel spreadsheet, and I sent it out. And probably 10 minutes later, several managers replied back, and they said, I'm colorblind, and you're the accessibility guy. So you kind of have to think through those things a bit.
Well, it's easy for us all to forget. Like you said, we still struggle with this particular manager. He's actually presenting tomorrow, and he's red-green colorblind, and to this day, years of working with him, we still have reports that are in the wrong colors.
Yes, exactly. There's a combination of things, color perception, and then as text gets smaller and smaller, it may be harder to process. There's contrast issues. Now, we live in Seattle, not a lot of sunny days, but yesterday I was walking out in the sun trying to use my cell phone, and suddenly all of the data washes out and I find myself ducking into a shadow to try to read and interact with my cell phone because the contrast went low. There's an interesting analogous is when contrast goes to zero, that could be because you have no sight or because there's situations where you frankly don't want to be able to use your sight.
Yeah, so like for example, I would argue that very low contrast is appropriate for text messaging in cars.
Yes, so that's right. Things you should not be doing while you're driving. And then we have what are some of the more severe motor functions, and then really what can you do through this assistive technology? So really, what is accessibility? And to us, when we think about it, it's really about usability that connects lives. So in this case, Steve's able to use his technology to communicate with his family, his wife, and friends. And in the simpler case today, where we're projecting the PowerPoint out to your device, it allows me as a presenter to connect to you in the best way possible. It allows someone with low vision or no vision to hear and interact and not miss what's going on. So really for us, it's about how do we connect people through technology. And so that really starts with you and how do we help you build and create a more accessible app. And that really comes through things of why do we want to do it? Well, for us, again, it's really about impacting people's lives. It kind of maximizes the use of your app. So if you're building applications for education or for the workplace or just for fun, it really allows everybody to kind of interact and use that application. And for those who are developers or pragmatic, sometimes you want test automation. So how do I make sure I continue to build my app, make sure it works and continues to work going forward? And frankly, we just love doing it. It's kind of fun. It's great to go out and help people out. It's great to think about different ways to really build that interaction model between people. So there's lots of parts in this stack. So at the top, of course, is always your app. And there's the different frameworks that you can use. So you can use the XAML framework, the WebHTML framework, Win32 if you like. And it all kind of flows down through some of the lower layers around UI automation. I'm going to spend a little time on UI automation because it really is the contract. It is the API set that actually says the intent of your application. So if you know you want something to work from a button or a list box, it describes it in a way that allows a screen reader to have it read to someone or allow a screen reader to take action on behalf of somebody. And if you look through all the stack, there's input pieces. How do you do input for those that can't move well? How do you render the text so it's easy to read for high contrast scenarios? And all the things, again, enable the other side of that, which is the assistive technology. So narrators are built in screen reader. How do you really help someone who's blind interact or low vision read and interact with the data that's on the screen? There's some basic voice command and control, and what's called Windows Speech Recognition. And it uses that same data, so you know, to click controls, interact with controls. And you saw an example of a third-party assistive technology through the Tobii eye tracking that helps Steve do his work every day. So what is it that we kind of think about and own and work on every day? And we work on that XAML layer, we work on the HTML layer, we work on making sure that your code is easy to translate into UI automation, so that way it enables narration if need be, voice command and control, third-party assistive technology. So we run that entire gamut, and we spend every day kind of thinking about how do we make it better and simpler for you to do that. And today's talk focuses primarily on screen reading, because there's a large benefit that comes from doing this. If you work through the API set and the problem space, you end up helping do not only narrator, but speech recognition, third-party apps. There's a large amount of benefit gained throughout the entire system.
Oh, and just to step back 1 second, is that the narrator is probably the best demonstration of that protocol layer. So Brett talked about the UI automation system and the fact that that defines the protocol between all of these different disparate UI frameworks and the various things that need to run on top of it. So narrators, speech recognition, all of these things, they all pipe through this UI automation layer. And so it gives this framework agnostic way of doing it. So now you can have voice reading happen across your platform, your app, regardless of implementation technology. Even if you build using some other thing like Unity or something like this, you can still plumb through UI automation to allow all of these things to light up. So even in cases where you don't necessarily think that there's a direct correlation to assistive technologies, you can get the benefit of screen reading from your app.
Correct. So really one of the core things is, well, I get asked all the time, how do I help my app read aloud?
Hey, Brett, how do I get my app to read aloud?
Awesome question. So today, I really call it what I consider to be as a narrator red line. Everybody's written red lines. Everybody's sketched a red line. Everybody knows how to draw out and really understand the transitions of their app.
Has anyone here worked with a graphic designer? Anyone? Yes, great. Have you ever gotten a picture with little lines on it that said this should be 2 pixels wide and this should be this color, and they write it out in like RGBA in CMYK values that you then have to figure out what the RGB value is and then translate it to a color safe palette because they picked some Pantone color, all that craziness? Like, that's the designer red line. That's the visual red line.
Yes.
And it's this pixel perfect manifestation of what your UI should look like.
You know, and all of those include a kind of a step-by-step walkthrough of UI. Where does it happen? What are the color transitions? And so it is that transition, that ability to take that same concept, have a start state, a transition, and an end. And you'll see that in all of these red lines. And so we're going to take a moment, and I'm going to focus on it all through a sketch. And I'm going to do it based on the start menu. Now, during Windows 8, the start menu team arrived and said, hey, we want to put tiles on the start menu. But I don't know what to do from an accessibility perspective. I said, all right, great. So I walked over, stood at a whiteboard in a conference room, and I said, describe to me what it is. And so this was roughly the sketch I built. I said, well, they mentioned we're going to have tiles. They could be square. They could be rectangle. They could be really large squares. They could be small squares. But they all sit on a grid. All right. Anything else? Yes, they have names. Okay. And they have other data. Your news comes in. I want to hear a little bit about the news. I said, awesome, you just described all of the properties of this. I said, yeah, we think we can do that, but we're really worried about what it means to rearrange a tile. And I said, okay, well, tell me how it happens. I said, well, I put my finger down, and I start moving the item, and nothing really happens until I get to a certain state where everything snaps and changes. And I said, well, all right, so somewhere in code you start that. Yep. And somewhere you start dragging and you change the visuals. Yep. And when that visual changes to put the new location with things on the left and the right of it, you know where that code happens. So great. Now you actually know everything you need to know to kind of put that from a start, transition, end. And it turns out in this case, that's just a drag-drop pattern. And you start, tell them what happens, and we'll end. So let's take a little walk through this.
So we're going to start up Narrator,
yep.
Which, how many people have ever launched Narrator on their computer? Search window. Anyone? Awesome. You came to this, and for those of you who haven't, bringing up narrator is most commonly done accidentally.
Yes.
And by hitting Windows key enter, your machine will start talking to you, and you will not be able to figure out how to stop it. And you will wildly mash on the keyboard to make it shut up, and then you'll figure out that Windows key enter will make it stop again. One of the big changes we've been making, we've been working hard on improving Narrator and making it a lot more performant, a lot faster. And one of the things that we actually fixed a lot on was to make startup and shutdown faster. Because when people started it and there was a long delay, they wouldn't correlate that behavior. Yes. So we start up Narrator here, we put Windows key enter. Most of the Narrator commands are accessed using the caps lock key. And this lets you do special commands. Otherwise, the normal keyboard shortcuts just continue to go through the program. So Brett selected the first item, and so let's see what Narrator says.
File Explorer, 1 of 3.
Okay.
Non-selected, draggable.
So we heard a bunch of information the Narrator read. It said it was an item, it said that it was a 1 of 3, and so you can see, visually, we can see that there are 3 things that it must be talking about, the top 3 things in the menu. So Brett, why don't we arrow down and go to one of the tiles.
In visuals, main group head, mail, search. Universities under pressure to divest from search. Weather, 3 of 7. Project Spartan, 2 of 7.
So you can hear
Project Spartan, 2 of 7.
You can hear Narrator saying things many times.
Apparently. Yes.
But we can hear Narrator reading information about where it is in the position in the list. And so if you were a user wanting to use this, you might want to reorder these so you can get to the things you use the most commonly early. Just because it's a grid, a visual grid, doesn't mean that a non-sighted person wouldn't care about where they go in this list. And it's told us it's draggable, it's told us that it's where it is, and it's told us the text on it. And we heard when it was on search, it actually told us the live tile information. So all of that can be read very easily to you. And now we want to do that activity that we talked about in the read-through, or the walkthrough, which was to rearrange the tile. And so there's a keyboard shortcut, which I just learned about yesterday. I didn't realize there was an awesome shortcut for this, and I love keyboard shortcuts. So Alt-Shift, I believe.
Alt-Shift plus arrow keys.
And then arrow keys will allow you to drag and drop with your keyboard. And so let's start that operation.
Drop to place in main before mail in column 3, row 2.
Now,
drop to place in main between weather and calendar in column 4, row 2.
So if we heard that, now, just for those of you who aren't familiar with this, we have slowed Narrator down a lot from what normal accessible users use it for, so that we can kind of hear it, but even then it's pretty fast. So let's do it one more time.
Drop to place in main before mail in column 3, row 2.
So it told us drop to place in main, the name of the group, so drop to place in main, row 3, column 2, I believe is what it said.
Yep.
Between mail and weather. So it told us all of that information, the 2 items to the side, what position it was in the grid, and what the name of the group was. And then let's continue forward and do the next
drop
one.
Drop to place in main between mail and weather in column 2, row 2.
And then place it.
Drag complete.
And so all of that information, the drag complete, all of that stuff that we talked about, and it's really the same way verbally you'd communicate it. Like if I looked here and said, please move 1 chair to your right, you would know exactly what that, well, except we're facing different directions, you'd be confused by the direction thing, but no one would be confused what that activity was or what I was asking it to do, and if he said, I've moved to the seat to my right, you would all understand that as well. The big thing we find on a lot of this accessibility work is just getting people to think about it as normal human communication and not some crazy ACK inspector, UI automation
yes.
tree, all of this stuff, and instead think about the output, the audible interface that you want for your program.
Yeah, basically if you're talking to someone on the phone. Now to prove this out a little further, let's just do this for a second.
And now we're gonna see if we can all figure out what Brett is doing.
Drop to place in main before mail, drop to place in main between weather and calendar in column 4, row 2.
Okay. Right.
Complete.
Let me throw this
now,
down.
Does everyone know what the screen's gonna look like? See at least one person nodding, so you're paying attention, that's good.
Please increase to 55.
All right.
Great.
Let's see what happened.
If we all thought it was between the weather and calendar, then we're right, and we listened very carefully. All right. So.
Exiting narrator.
So the ability to take what you already know in your app to understand the design, to be able to really walk through that narrator red line is super important, and we're going to do two examples. And so Chris has done a little research on some colors.
Yeah, does anyone read XKCD? It's a great webcomic. Yes, we got at least one person. So XKCD did this interesting thing on the science of colors and what people think different colors are. So he did a survey and ended up getting about 200,000 people to respond on what they defined color names to be was. And it's very interesting if you crowdsource your list of colors, the names that you get back. And so I want to do a little web app that allows me to browse through that list of colors and select one. And using a pattern that we've found that people often have troubles with on the web, which is kind of these rich, listy kinds of things.
Yep. So as you type, your expectation is the list kind of narrows down. You can go down and select that list by pressing Enter on it. And we see that quite often. And in some cases, as things happen on the screen, you might have a location to tell people more information, the number of colors. And those really translate to things such as in mail apps or things where you sync, there's always this badge somewhere that says loading and syncing. And so we'll kind of go through that and see what it looks like.
Yeah, so we built up, this is our little sketch. So Brett had us go through this, and we did that thing, that red lines experience. And so we have our app here. And so I can see my colors. I can select some. We can go look through them. I made this into a little list box. So we can go through and select an item. We can see, you know, it turns out that if you ask a large population of people, you will come up with a statistically significant selection of vomit-oriented colors. All right. Awesome. So should we try this with Narrator?
Let's do it.
http://localhost3000/internet-explorer-window.
Excellent. So let's type a color.
Red, shall we?
Red. Red wine number 8C0034, group.
Okay, so far it's not read a lot of what we asked it to.
Nope.
We wanted it to read the number of items in the list as it filtered, which I can actually see. I have this
magnifier window.
Awesome text right here that says how many are selected, but we didn't read it. And then as I selected an item, it said some weird stuff.
http://localhost3000/internet-explorer-window. http://localhost3000/red-pink-number-fa2-of-55, group.
It said group. Group is not what we really have.
Yes.
Probably really a list item.
Sitting narrator.
So let's just start with fixing the number.
Okay, great.
Because one of the things that happens visually is you're typing, this shrinks, and that's significant because how many things do you want to go look through? Well, if you can't see that, how do you know that list is narrowing to something you might want to go start picking through and looking at? So let's talk about the large amount of code it takes to do this.
Great. So this is my little app. I did this using the most hacky techniques I could think of that web developers have been known to do. So I'm just generating a big old string of divs. And every time I update the display based on the thing, I simply go through and grab all the colors, I string concat them all together, and I blast them into my inner HTML. This is awesome.
Perfect. Perfectly, great. Not quite accessible, but we're close.
So let's see. So we want it to read that text every time we change it, which we've got this line of text right here, which says, hey, summary text content equals the color length.
Yep.
And so
one simple thing. Great. We need to add a property.
Great.
Are you alive? Equals polite.
So here is our summary element, and so we'll say
aria-live.
Because we like politeness.
It's better than being rude.
Yes. So we'll save that, go back and refresh. Actually, we don't need to refresh. We'll go back and run this.
Start HTTP, end of line. 672 of 949 matched. 309 of 949 matched. 50, red. 6 of 949 matched.
Awesome. So now as a screen reader consumer, I can immediately know that I'm down to a reasonable number. I can go in and start walking through and selecting colors.
And probably one of the most critical ones is actually
http://localhost3000
is when you come in.
6 of 949 matched. 0 of 949 matched.
Probably the most interesting one is when you get to nothing in the list.
Correct.
Because now I know there's nothing in there.
Three, exiting narrator.
All right. So what's the next thing we should fix? We said that it wasn't reading the right thing on each item either.
Correct. So we'd probably like to read as a list item.
But so why is it saying group?
Because the div is just automatically transitioned into a group.
Great. So I made it visually a list. I spent the time to, like, I added keyboard focus, and I was a good web dev, and made it the right thing, but it still wasn't quite right.
It was not quite right.
Because it doesn't know that it's a list item. So let's go fix that. What do we do next?
Go to your list item.
Great. So this big blob of HTML up here. Lovely.
Yep.
I'm guessing I'm going to have to add more attributes.
Yep. Going to have another attribute on there, an aria role. Now, if you haven't done a lot of web development, there's a key thing going on here for divs to turn them into accessibility is aria.
Which stands role, for, I believe.
What's that?
It's role.
Yeah, aria. Yes. Role equals. Yep.
Okay. Is that it?
We got the, let's start with that. Run it.
http://localhost:3000/pane 0% vertically scrolled. Dark pastel green number 56 AE 57.
It no longer says group.
No longer says group.
That's beautiful. We're getting Excellent. Closer.
But I'd probably like to know what number I'm on. Because it's like visually easy to see
yes.
that I'm on that I'm on number 4, number 2, number 3. So let's go ahead and put in the number.
Okay, so that's a
kind of an aria. Pause in set. And set size, which stands for position and set, and then the overall set size. So okay. What's your N of M?
And I conveniently have the index for there, and then we need to have the aria set size, you said it was?
Yep, pause and set, and set size.
And so then we just go and say total count. And we'll go back.
Start HT, end of line. Cloudy blue number ACC2D9. Dark pastel green number 56AE57.
I know why that's not reading. Do you?
We're missing the list box.
Yes.
Desktop.
So list, just like if you think about, if you're familiar with XAML or HTML, you have this notion of kind of container elements. So you have a list box and there are list items inside of it.
Yep.
Well, accessibility needs to know both pieces of information as well.
Correct.
In the case of this, we have a div, which we just have lots of divs, like it's HTML, everything's a div. And we told the accessibility system that we had list area. Items.
But we did not tell it's in a list box.
But we did not tell it was a list box. So let's go and fix that. So we'll go here to the index.html, and we'll say for our color select, we'll say role equals list box. Okay, and let's go try that.
Start http://localhost:3000/int dust number B2996E, 2 of 949.
Awesome.
Non-selected.
Ooh, and it says non-selected.
Awesome. So we got a 2-for-1 deal. We fix that it's a list box and a list item.
Non-selected.
And then by default it says, okay, great, it must not be selected, but does it tell us if it's selected?
It's not. This one is clearly selected.
56AE57, 1 of 949. Non-selected.
Okay.
All right. So we're close. Narrator.
We're getting close.
So now if you go back and do another property, for when it's selected, and that would be aria selected equals true.
Okay, so here's this is my little HTML code. So in this, I have a event handler, which is when I want to tag the selected. And
yep.
So I'm already adding the selected CSS style, which shouldn't that be enough?
It wouldn't, no.
Yeah, that's a good point, okay.
So
let's go add this in. So here we're trying to remove it. So I believe we'd want to do set attribute aria selected to be false. And then down here, when we select it, we'll simply say the element we're going to and set selected equal to true.
Awesome.
Is that right?
That's right.
Okay.
Now let's try it out.
Start HTTP reddish gray number 997,570, 0, selected. Reddish gray number
awesome.
9, in red wine number 8C0, selected.
Yay.
Red wine number 8C0034.
So now.
Exiting narrator.
How much code was this?
Let's look. So this was a lot of code. It was pretty painful. Let's look at our diff. So here's the total diff we have. So we added 3 lines of code to our markup, mm-hmm. and then these 2 function calls to say aria selected, and then we made 1 other change, which was to add the aria live and the role. So about a total of 6 changes to make that pretty accessible.
Yep. And so that's a nice thing when folks sit down and they walk through it. Really, what do? We looked at the app, we dissected the image, we walked through it, and what are the visual things that are going on in the app at that time. And we just walked through and added a few pieces of markup, and we're good. Well, there's a second set of things that we see folks commonly do, and that is that they love to have groups of things, and you don't really know when transitions happen. So today, when you think about apps such as music apps and video apps and loading things across the web, there's always this larger level set, and you click on it, reuse the list box, you load a bunch of stuff, it may take a while, and then you either have one or more things that show up. And so in this, again, we go back to our sketch. Here's our top level list with sets. It may be loading. Who knows what it's doing during that load? And then we get to the end. There may be one or more things there. So I think you've built pretty much the same app.
Yeah.
Based on your color selection.
So here, instead of using HTML, we decided to use XAML to show this behavior. And this is a, like Brett said, this is a very common pattern we see, people reusing the list box. In this case, I'm just gonna have a set of colors. We go and we can drill into one of these and it'll show all the colors that map approximately to that color. And so here we can see three things that, we can see a couple things that show up to this color. And if we go to a different color, we have the reds have a few other things. And in each case, what I've done to simulate the common pattern that we see people kind of getting messed up in is we have a nice delay between each one of these screens. And so if we look, you know, let's see what behavior we get by default out of XAML. Because now we have a real list. Hopefully it's going to be a little better.
Color tree.
Yes.
Back, red. System. Dark purple. System. Collections. Generic. Dark purple. Sky blue. Light blue. Teal. System.collections.generic.list teal.
That's
system.collections.
How about we fix that part?
And if we go in here, let's go look at one more thing.
See. Back button.
Okay, so we navigated in with the keyboard and now we're sitting in the back button. I didn't know there was loading. If
nope.
I closed it, I didn't know where your focus went.
Back button.
Again, the same process.
Navigation button.
So what happens in this case is that, again, you look at the start state. Loading happens, loading finishes, and no one ever really knows kind of what happened.
So we've got a couple things to fix.
Yep.
What order do we want to go at them at?
Exiting narrator.
Should we get rid of that weird naming?
Let's get rid of the naming first. There's this side effect where sometimes you get the class name added to your overall name, and that's usually not useful.
Well, we did.
Unless
you're a developer. XAML does a really smart thing, which is it takes whatever data item you put into a list view, and it uses that as the accessible name. It just calls toString on it. Now, that works out great until the object you get is something like a key value pair that's a generic collection, which is what some of my data is in this example, because it was very easy to do. And so in that case, toString of a key value pair reads the class name, which is very not useful. So let's fix that. We've added an event to grid view, which lets you know when the content for a container is changing. And so we'll go to that event. And we'll go in and implement this with our new code instead of throwing an exception. Ah. Look, no hands.
Awesome.
What this does is we have two types of items in our list. We have either the top level things, which are these key value pairs, or we have the lower level things, which are individual colors. Since I'm reusing the same grid view, for the items, I use a template selector, which if you're familiar with the XAML object model, a template selector lets you choose between different views. In this code, I'm just gonna look at the data type of the object to determine what I need to do. And so the important call here is automationproperties.setName. And this allows me to control the name that's gonna be read for this. Basically, when this thing gets activated, what do you want narrator to speak? And so it's really easy to go set this property using our data model. And so we can push that in and let's see how that fixes it. So now, hopefully, if we did it right, we will hear good things.
Much better colors.
Color tree, black, 1 of 27. Not selected.
So three.
Three.
The rest of this, XAML did all right by default. It's listing the number of items that are in there, it's listing the color name, like all that stuff came for free, the selection, all that. So like by default, you get a pretty good experience. You just need to figure out these little details to go tweak.
Exactly.
Exiting narrator.
Now the nice thing here is in the web space, it was ARIA. And in the XAML case, it's automation peers.
Automation properties.
Properties, sorry. Yes, thank you.
All right. So we saw a couple other things that we didn't get, which was the transitions.
Yep.
Awkwardly.
Yes.
So let's fix that.
Let's notify people about what's going on. So when you click it, we want it to hear it's know that it's loading, so I'm not just waiting for infinity, and at least to give them an idea of what's going on.
So when we did this in HTML, we used the ARIA Live Region feature, which allowed us to have a little text area that we said, hey, every time we change this, we want you to go read this to the user so that they know what happened. So we'll do a similar thing here in the XAML tree. So what I'll just do is I'm going to go throw somewhere in the tree, pretty much almost can be anywhere. I'm going to put this element in. And so we just want a text block that it can read. So we'll say text block, name, reader, and then we'll say we want to have it have a automation properties dot live setting is polite. So similar to what we did before. One other important thing we should do here, because we already have a progress indicator for those pesky sighted people who can see the screen.
Yes.
Having a duplicative text area will probably get in their way.
Yes.
So I think we should make this invisible.
Let's make, yes, but not collapsed.
Not collapsed. So we'll make opacity zero. Now it's important for those of you taking note at home, to make this be opacity zero, not visibility collapsed. Visibility collapsed takes it out of the visual tree, and so it will not be seen, it will not be read, it will not participate in the accessibility. By making it opacity zero, it is invisible, but it is present. And so in this case, we can use this to trigger the narrator to read the right thing. Great. And so now we just need to have a little function. Oops, that's not the right function. Ah, the robots are taking over! Okay, great. We're just going to say a function called void update reader. And so we'll just take in the message, and so we'll say reader.text equals the message we want to say. Lovely.
Perfect.
And then we have one last thing to do. So we said automation properties.
Yes.
Is the way you do this. And XAML loves control. HTML like makes lots of decisions for you. It's totally dynamic. It's the whole hippie free world. You just go whack on things, they magically happen. In XAML, we said we want you to control. We don't want every time you touch something to change. We want you to go in and have control over when this happens. So we need to tell XAML, we want you to read right now. Go notify the user. And so I think we do this with this awesome line of code, which is framework element automation peer. This is the automation peer.
Yes.
And we'll say from element of the reader, and we'll say, what do we need to do here?
What's that? Five.
Is it raise event?
Yes.
There you go. Thank you, sir.
Raise event.
And we'll say the live region changed. So the framework automation peer is this, it is that implementation, that protocol. We talked about UI automation and the fact that you have this protocol to control what the screen reader does. In XAML, they have a set of classes called automation peers. And for every element you see on the screen, there's an automation peer behind the scenes. And if you create a custom control, you can actually create your own automation peer that can do anything you want. You can lie to accessibility, you can lie to the screen reader, but you can also do cool things like you can omit things from the automation API such that you can say, oh, I have like 30 levels of nested CRUD in my visual tree, but I don't want any of that to show up when people read it, and so I want you to jump down to this nested element inside.
Turn it all off, or if you're building full custom canvases, you're doing all your own D2D rendering, you can also then enable that through the automation peer as well, so screeners can read it regardless of whether it's a full custom control or we're just modifying a common control.
Awesome. So here we have where we put that busy wait is active, which this is the spinner guy, right?
Yep.
So here we want to say have it say something, right? So update reader.
Just loading for now.
Your data
is loading.
Be here shortly.
Kind of a long sentence, but we've got time.
I felt like I needed to express my creativity. All right, so we've had it say something. Mm-hmm. Should we run?
Yep, let's see what happens. So we've hooked up the live region, we've given it a text block to look at, and we're explicitly telling it what to say.
Color tree, black, 1 of 27, green, 3 of 27, back button. Your data will be here shortly.
Hey.
Okay, we're close.
We're close. I didn't know my data got here, though.
That's exactly. I was going to say, and that we started it, we now know the data's on its way, but we don't really know what happened. So commonly people ask, well, do I need to tell you that the data's loaded? Do I need to change that message? And in fact, the answer really is no. We just want to put them right on the first option. So let's set focus there.
Okay, great.
Cool tip, color tree, Microsoft Visual.
Let's not have narrator read all of my code. Okay, now remember that line of code that was the robots taking over? That is now the right thing to do. The robots should take over right now. So let me explain what this does. If we have some items in the grid view, we want to restore focus to that first item. Now, if you're using XAML in a mode where you're actually doing true XAML navigation between pages, the XAML grid view does the right thing. It sets the focus to the right element. It puts the right thing. It restores focus to the last thing. It has a journal for tracking the stuff. However, the reason we're showing it to you this way is that we continue to see people who reuse their list view, because there's actually some performance benefits of taking the same list view and using it again and again. And when you run in this way, XAML just doesn't know what to do. It's not going to steal focus from your app, and so it's not going to do it by default. So you now have to take on some of this burden. And this is a case where, even as a sighted user, the fact that my focus was getting kind of stolen to that back button, as a keyboard user, would be pretty annoying. Eventually, I'd learn that every time you clicked enter to go into something, I have to hit tab. But it's even more frustrating to a non-sighted user, especially when narrator just doesn't read the right thing.
Correct.
And so what we do here is I scroll into view the item that was selected, that was last selected, or that we want to show. I update the layout. I force a synchronous layout of the grid view, so this forces the containers to be realized, so that we have a real XAML element, which we can then go and grab and set focus to it. The reason we pass in programmatic is so that if the user's not using the keyboard, they won't see the dotted lines, the ants, appear around the element. And so we've done this, and so I think we're good, right?
Let's give it a shot.
All right.
One of the things Chris was talking about is that if you had to tab into it and restart through the list, it just takes a long time to get through the same list. So
color
if that
tree,
list is
black, green,
100
green
things long, it's really hard to go back through it. So let's see what happens. Green?
It keeps talking over you.
Yeah, I know.
Okay.
It's not so polite.
Back button. Your data will be here shortly. Kelly Green, 1 of 7.
Nice.
Non-selected.
Perfect.
Great.
Now if we go back.
Back button. Your data will be here shortly. Back button. Green. 3 of 20. Dark blue.
Now I want to go to one of these that is these little shaded guys.
Let's do it.
Because I know something secret about my code.
Uh-oh.
Because I wrote it. Which is anyone that has this little cool gradient actually has no colors in it. Let's see what happens.
Back button. Your data will be here shortly.
Is my data there yet? I'm not looking.
I didn't see it.
Are we still waiting?
Yes, still waiting.
Still waiting.
I don't think it's coming.
Okay. I don't think it's coming
now
either.
Now what do I do?
And so there's one other interesting transition we should handle.
The zero case.
Yes, the zero case. So before we had that little progress guy, that was great. And so what here we're going to do is we're going to add in one line of code to just update that function call, which we're going to say, hey, if grid view items account equals zero, let's actually have narrator say something. So we'll say update reader, and we'll say no items. And so that's our last case, right?
Perfect.
So run.
Color tree, green, blue, light blue, 10, back button. Your data will be here shortly. No items.
Nice.
Awesome. So now everything that's visual.
Exiting narrator.
Comes out audibly, and again, how many lines of code are we talking again?
Let's go look at that. I closed my Team Explorer window. Okay, we'll do this the old-fashioned way. We added one line here.
And then here we added 15 lines, maybe?
Okay.
To convert it from relatively inaccessible to
very
exactly
accessible.
What we wanted.
Exactly what we wanted. Now, the interesting thing, too, you can run that with magnifier on once.
Oh, yeah.
So the comment we made earlier is that by really helping solve screen reading problems, you actually help other assistive technologies.
OK, can everyone see it in the back now? No.
Color tree, but Kelly Green, 1 of 7. Non-selected. Back button. Your data will be here shortly. Back button. Green, green. Dark blue. Dark teal, teal. 8 of 27. Back button. Your data will be here shortly. Dark blue green. 1 of 4.
So now
you see. Back button.
And then
your
one
data
last
will be here shortly.
Yep.
Navigation, teal. 8 of 27. Non-selected. Exiting narrator.
So again, by looking at that nice narrow slice of how to make screen readers work, you get the benefit now of magnifier tracking focus. Again, remember when you're zoomed in, if you had to look at that long list and move the magnifier around, it's easy to get lost. It's hard to find your place again. So really, a little bit of work in narrator goes a long way in helping people with magnification and other assistive technologies. So kind of our goal today was, hey, do you know how to walk through your app now? Think about each step. Think about the start state, the transition, and the end. And as you can see, really, from the HTML side, it was about 6 lines of code. From the XAML side, it was about 15, 16 lines of code. It went from something that was not usable to very, very usable by a screen reader in a very short amount of lines of code. Again, in the HTML world, it's all about ARIA. It really helps divs be decorated in a way that can be accessible. And then both our automation peers and automation properties are what we use to help make XAML be accessible. And then from doing that, again, all of this goes across all the Windows Universal platform. So on the mobile device or the desktop, you're going to get that same experience that you want. And then there's a couple of links down here really about where to go get more information as a developer, and then the two links to the source code you saw Chris work on today.
Yeah, if you look at the two projects, there's a branch, which is the demo start branch, and then there's a branch that's master, which is the final version that has everything working. So you can look at those two and see what we had to change. Awesome.
So,
thank you very much.
Yes. Is there any questions? Do we have time for questions?
Yeah, we have time for questions.
If you want to go to the microphone, if anybody has questions or want to talk through things, let us know. I think there's a microphone there or over there. Or you can catch us afterwards
awesome.
Also.
We are going to be in the
Windows Insider Lounge.
Windows Insider Lounge for the next 90 minutes or so if you have any questions about anything. Oh, yes. Do we know anything about the Ability Accessibility Group?
MVP.
OK,
yes.
Great.
Yeah, so the question was, were we aware of the MVP group around accessibility at Microsoft? And the answer is, yes, we are. I definitely agree that they would be interested in the information. So,
excellent.
Thank you.